Coming up next, WWER presents Your Care Partners, a show dedicated to providing support and education to our community about caregiving. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Experienced professional caregivers Jill White and Marty Allman have casual conversations about care, offering advice and tips to help navigate caring for others. Jill White is a certified dementia practitioner and an Alzheimer's Association facilitator for caregiver support groups with over 30 years' experience working in long-term care. Marty Allman is certified as a master trainer for the Best Friends approach to Alzheimer's. She is a certified psychiatric nursing assistant with over 20 years' experience working in long-term care.
Welcome to WWER 88.1 FM. I'm Marty Allman.
And I'm Jill White.
And we're your care partners. Today's topic is care planning. But first, I want to say, Jill, happy anniversary. We've actually been doing this for a year.
Yes.
This is our 13th episode.
Wow. Exciting. Who would have thunk it?
Right? So, and I'm glad we're doing this. We have scheduling issues and things like that, but I'm real happy that we're able to offer this information to people.
Absolutely. And I know, those from hearing from people, we have definitely offered help to folks that are kind of struggling and in need of a little guidance. And I'm just thrilled and proud of us that we're able to give a little bit of the expertise and experience that we've gained over the years, many years for me.
yeah. Our experience is not going to waste now that we're both kind of out of the caregiving loop.
the daily 9 to 5 or 7 to whenever.
Exactly. We're just going to go over kind of an outline of care plans and how should, maybe families or a caregiver, or, maybe you want to outline a care plan for yourself for down the road if you, become ill or not able to care for yourself. So let's start with, I would just get a piece of paper and start making an outline. An important thing are, finding out what your care options are.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to be cared for in your home? Would you like to go to a day program, or would your family member benefit from going to a day program? There are programs out there. I know there's one in Montrose. I can't think of the name of it right now. Would you be more comfortable having your family member go to a facility, an assisted living, or perhaps a memory care?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also many assisted livings and nursing care centers offer respite care for.
Yeah, and I think that's the first place to start, like you said. And maybe even before that, on that paper, or if you're typing it or whatever, is kind of do an outline of what you know, either you or the person you're caring for, what they typically do in a day, what that will kind of tell you what their needs might be. Everything mm-hmm. from the physical caregiving to food or appointments are also kind of making a lot of notes. However you do that is probably key to making sure you get the proper plan in place.
Right. Yeah. Knowing that person, what their daily activities are.
Mm-hmm.
If I was planning for myself, I enjoy being busy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not one to sit still for very long. So, that would go into my care plan, as in, mm-hmm. Make sure Marty has jobs to do.
Right.
Or, a purpose. I mean, that would be very important for mm-hmm. me.
Yeah, and that can be tasked. And I know we've touched on so many of these things throughout the last year of these podcasts, but depending on where the person's at, it could be a simple household task that's assigned mm-hmm. to them that they enjoy doing. They feel good about accomplishing something, folding laundry, putting the dishes away, who knows, walking the dog. I have a friend in Florida right now And she feels very purposeful because she takes her daughter's dog for a walk, and she can still do that. And it's pretty cool. It's very, very awesome for everybody.
That's great for her. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many of us out there. I think people in the care field in general, you know, we want to be helping in some way. We're helpers.
Yep.
If you're the kind of person who might be a little more introverted and just enjoy quiet time and peaceful music, reading or listening to books on tape, choosing that person's care option, using those things to choose your person's care option, I think is kind of, in my book, because I come from the, you know, the recreation therapy background.
Yes.
Key. That's key.
Yes. And know their hobbies, their interests. You know, do they enjoy working in the garden? Maybe a raised garden bed for someone that can't get down on the ground anymore, or bird, you know, recordings of bird songs and or symphonies or whatever it is, whatever it is for each individual. I, like you said, knowing their likes, their interests, their time frame. Are they a morning person or not so much? You know, that's very, very important to getting it right.
For instance, you know, somebody who might be a little introverted, you know, a day program might not be right for that person.
Right.
Day programs tend to be filled with activities. You know, they do get the opportunity to rest, and they probably have like a breakfast and a lunch and a late snack. I would say day programs are probably for people who are very social.
Yes.
I don't know that that would be great for someone, you know, who is a little introverted. Maybe in-home care would be better for someone like that. Choosing care providers and establishing timelines. It cannot be emphasized enough that if you are not clicking with your person's doctor,
change it.
Change the doctor. You want someone to be your care partner. You need that. You know, you're visiting a doctor who, you know, might just want to be getting you in and out of the office.
Yeah.
You know, and not really listening to, you know, your person's needs.
And giving the time to have actual discussions and understand the whole
thing.
Not just what's wrong with you today. Okay, here's your injection. Here's your prescription. Bye. That doesn't
work. Right. And you knew you had said in the past, you know, perhaps calling before the appointment and saying, hey, you know, my person is having a hard time walking, or my person might have dementia or memory issues.
Yeah.
So the appointment might take a little bit longer. What would be a good time to schedule with you?
Yeah. Schedule a call, or even, you know, ask if you can drop off or email a list, you know, that you want the provider to actually look at before.
Oh, that's a good idea.
They welcome you in person. That gives them on at their own time a chance to review the chart and look at some of the personalized notes, you know.
And what's wonderful, I mean, I use VCU, but I'm sure other hospital systems do the same thing, is that now you can email your doctor.
Oh, it's fantastic. My chart.
And Yeah. I really like that because I can have commentary with my doctor within 24 hours.
So that's
a really good idea, Jill, to, you know, kind of write down your questions and what you want to talk about beforehand. And then the next thing on our list is legal and financial planning.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this, of course, in the past and had legal representatives do presentations at the communities that we worked at. But it's really important to have the paperwork in order, obviously, before it's needed. And that means communication. Sometimes it's hard, but it's very important to have open communication with those that you wish to put in place to take care of your wishes. And I think it's key to make everyone aware of the fact that what's in your will, what's in your advanced medical directive, what's in your powers of attorney, those are all your personal preferences. And sometimes feelings get hurt or people are a little upset when they find things out, perhaps afterwards. Shockingly, I think it helps to tell everybody, like your dad did, my mom did. I didn't have to make one decision. I just carried out all her wishes. And it was such an easier job for me to do because I wasn't wondering if I was doing the right thing, or disagreeing with siblings or whatever. It's
right.
This is what I want, and this is how I wish you would do it for me. And you don't have to have, let's say, the oldest child be the spokesperson or the executrix or the power of attorney. You know, you want to try to assign the tasks. And I know, Marty, like you did in your family with your dad, you all had different strengths. And mm-hmm. So you kind of can do that. You know, one person might be really good with finances. So obviously that's the person you probably should give some, you know, financial control to. Someone else may be much better, a people person or a caregiver. And so that maybe that person would be in charge of, you know, the caregiving aspect and putting these kinds of like care plans in place that we're talking about. So, but I think the being really open in communication and honest about why you're doing what you're doing and choosing whom you're choosing. And of course, you need to get an attorney and check around, talk to people who use local attorneys to find out who they felt most comfortable with, who gave them the best advice and suggestions and alternatives. There's a lot of different ways to protect assets. So it's important to know what those are. And also update, probably, unless there's been some significant change, you probably should update all your legal paperwork every 5 years. Things change. Your condition may change. People in your life may change. You may have grandchildren you didn't have, or you may have family members that you want to now include, whatever.
Right.
So kind of keep an open mind. It should almost be a work in progress. I mean, it's at any one mm-hmm. point, once you sign it, that's what it is until the next time, you know, you plan to change it.
Right.
But it should be a current one. We had something happen in my husband's family where the only will that supposedly was found was one from the 1980s. And it was known for a fact that there was one much more recent and not quite as advantageous, shall we say, to the person from the 80s. But, you know, if you don't give that information out, and always let someone know where your important documents are, the names of your yeah. banker, your attorney, where your documents are kept, where your banks are, where, you know, all that stuff. Well, there's things online, of course, but there's also mm-hmm. Booklets and things that you can fill out with all that information, passwords, all that important stuff really does need to yeah. be in a very safe place, but it needs to be available to whomever's going to pick up the slack when you've decided to check out.
yeah, definitely when, you know, that person needs to know where those things are, for sure.
Yep.
I know that there are attorneys that specialize in estate planning.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there are attorneys that are
elder law attorneys. Yeah.
Elder law attorneys. Yes. Advocates for the elderly. So those are things that you could look into as well for yourself or, you know, with your family member.
For sure.
Yeah. The next thing on our outline is daily care. This is going to be for each individual person. Everybody's different and everybody has different habits and wants and needs and medication demands and things like that. So, you know, we go back to know your person,
mm-hmm.
Know yourself, talk to your person. There is a really great tool out there. I believe it's called the Five Wishes. Am I correct, Jill?
Yep. Five Wishes. Yep.
Yeah. And this really gets into detail about, you know, who your person is. Mm-hmm. Do you like coffee or tea in the morning? You know, what foods don't you like and don't want to be served? You know, have there been any incidents, life-changing incidents mm-hmm. in that person's past? It really does go into detail. And it helps you ask your person questions, or it helps you, you know, decide
yes.
what you would like in the future. So one of the
I'm sorry. I was just because it reminded me of something. One of the companies we worked for years ago, one of the persons we worked with, she actually, I believe, authored the My Life, My Way booklet,
oh.
which is okay. everything from how you liked, like, and it assumes that at some point you may be non-communicative. So if you're non-communicative and someone's helping you get into bed, how do you like, what's your position? On your back, on your sides? Do you need a pillow under your knees? You know, those things, if you think about it, you might not be able to sleep properly if things aren't the way you're comfortable having them. So all those things, that's why I said take notes even during the day of the things that you appreciate doing or that you need to have done or that you just want to have done. And make note of them so that that can become part of your daily plan or that purpose,
Yeah. I mean, and it's the little things. I mean, it sounds really like minutia, but not really. I mean, like, I don't like certain things in my coffee.
Yep.
I'm not going to drink my coffee. And if I don't drink my coffee, you know, it's not going to be a good day.
And that also gives that person, they're still being independent enough to have what they want, how they want it as much as possible. And that's key. Mm-hmm. You know, no one wants to be shoved in a corner and given something they don't want to eat and something they don't want to drink. I mean, that's just demoralizing and depressing. And that's not what needs to happen. So it's a lot easier to know and understand and be able to provide what's going to make the difference.
I can remember asking the staff when I worked in the memory care at Riverside's The Orchard, we went around and we asked all the staff, you know, what is something that you know that you have to do every day for your own, for your spirit, that uplifts your spirit, you know? And some people would say, well, I read a verse in the Bible, or somebody says, you know, my coffee is really important to me. You know, mine was, I found myself, you know, going outside and looking at the stars every night before I go to bed, or I have to look out the window before I go to bed and look up at the sky. I don't know why.
It's a connection.
Yeah, but it's important to me.
Yeah, and we talk throughout, you know, in a lot of other areas, but moments of joy. Those moments of joy are important to keeping you going and keeping your spirits and up and feeling good about whatever it is you're doing or thinking about. So, yeah, that's super important for sure.
Yeah, and then the next thing on our care plan outline is stages and behavior. And what I'm thinking is, you know, okay, what stage are we in now?
Yeah.
And, you know, what behaviors are being exhibited now? And behaviors could be anything from maybe being agitated in the afternoon or wants to sleep a lot or
being snippy.
Being snippy when they're in pain.
Yeah.
Those things are important to document as well. So you, as the caregiver, are not taking things personally when somebody's having this behavior. You know, if they've got arthritis and you're trying to get them to move in the morning and they're snipping and snapping at you, you realize they're in pain. And so not to take it personally. So it's good to have that documented, you know, and kind of, we're in this place
right now. One of the things that nursing does for non-communicative patients is they do a body scan physically and they watch for reactions, facial expressions changing. If something, you know, pains, if they lift an arm and they see someone wince. I mean, there's a lot of ways to communicate. And I think as we all know now, it's not really verbal communication that works the best. It's the rest of it. So it's very important to pay attention. And there's usually a reason, there's a trigger, there's something that made that person do that behavior or whatever. There's usually a logical reason that the person dropped something or threw something or is ignoring it or turning away from it. You know, their teeth might hurt. Maybe you gave them something harder to chew and they spit it out. You're like, what the heck's going on now? So look beyond the behavior to what the cause might be. Try to be open to that.
Stages, you know, was the beginning of that. And this is going to change over time. And so, you know, When we worked in the field, we used to do these risk assessment meetings. Remember those risk meetings?
Yes, I do.
And they would go on for a really long time. But the point of the risk meeting was to go back to the care plan and review the care plan and see if anything changed on the care plan. You know, is this person at risk for pain? Is this person at risk for losing weight, or has this person's behavior changed, and how are we going to modify their care because of this new behavior?
You have to be reactive and never assume that tomorrow's going to be just like today was, because it won't be.
Mm-hmm. And we did those risk meetings, we did them once a month. Each time it was somebody different, usually.
Yes.
But so, and I would say, you know, if you're caring for someone, you know, just set yourself a reminder on your phone or your laptop that says, hey, review care plan, maybe 4 to 6 months.
Good idea. And that's also something you'll incorporate into doctor's visits.
Yes.
You want to let them know how things are progressing or digressing, whatever they're doing, you know?
And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I can look back on, you know, caring for my family and with my sisters, you know, women have a tendency to communicate pretty well with one another. But, you know, that's another time, you know, 4 to 6 months that, you know, you can do a three-way call or five-way call, you know, for a
yes.
We had five girls in the family. But we would do those calls with each other. Hey, this is where Dad's at now. You know, we've noticed this change and we just want everybody to be aware of it and, you know, get people's input or get, you know, ideas. You know, there are people that are lucky enough to have large families, but, you know, the caregiver should have a care partner as well, you know, somebody they can bounce things off of.
Yeah. Keeping everyone in the loop usually will minimize some of the backwash and backtalk and criticism because
those wonderful dynamics.
Family dynamics don't change. The people doing them just get older.
Right.
Yeah. Those buttons still get pushed.
And then the next thing on our list is safety. And that's really important just for, you know, not even just for people that have memory issues or, you know, may have dementia or something like that. But, you know, take a look around the house. You know, one of the number one tripping hazards in a home is a throw rug.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Or a pet.
And doesn't every elderly person have one of each? Including me. I got rid of the throw rugs. I still have the pets. Oh my God.
But you know, look at the environment that your person is in. If they're in a, you know, facility, I hate that word, facility.
I know, community living.
Yeah, if they're in community living, you know, they're going to be on the lookout for safety hazards.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad idea to kind of glance around your person's room just to make sure that there's maybe something that they missed.
Sure. You know? And medication. I mean, how many times did people, you know, they go in to clean their grandmother's house and find half her pills down inside the living room couch or whatever, or on the floor.
Right.
I finally found my aunt's teeth under the couch once after we'd already gotten a new set ordered because we couldn't find them anywhere. And the cleaning lady, obviously didn't do. So yeah, there's all kinds of things that can indicate a safety concern, and even just people living alone, a couple living alone, or anyone living alone, make sure their home is safe. The alarms, you know, CO2, whatever you need, smoke alarms are there, batteries are in, somebody in the neighborhood knows. And I know I've seen this before, and I know we've talked about it, Marnie, but like if you don't see my living room curtains open by 9 a.m., maybe call my daughter and let her know, you know, just things like that, that there's always another pair of eyes. Keeping tabs. And of course the wonderful granny cams, those cameras are marvelous in the right place. Let's be respectful and have dignity, but in the right place, they can be a lifesaver for caregivers.
Yes. Yeah. And I think it's Alexa drop in or something
Google Home, Alexa, they all have that now where you can just drop in. My kids drop in on their dad at his community living place. And, and he can also, you know, contact them easily. So yeah, there's a lot of more things are available. However, you have to realize that the person may not have the skills to understand it. You have to start it early. You don't want to have somebody that's in later stages dementia with, you know, a little white thing on the table next to them all of a sudden talking to them, that'll probably just scare them more than
anything. Yeah.
So understand where they're coming from and what they're feeling and understanding. It's key. And understanding, and I know you've done this forever, is understanding the different phases and what you may expect in each stage, because they are different. They do, there is a progression. There's no guidelines, but there is a general outline of progression, and you just kind of have to monitor and watch to see where they're
at. Yeah, they will go through different stages. And, you know, I'm not a doctor or anything like that, but I, because I've worked in memory care for so long, a lot of times I would see the stages change after someone had had like a mild illness, like a cold or a stomach bug or something like that. I would see just some mild cognitive changes after they recovered from that cold, or
the baseline isn't quite up to where it was. And the hospitalization or anesthetics are the worst for indicating changes, and may take the longest amount of time for them to get back to a baseline. And it may not ever be the baseline that was there prior to the incident.
Correct.
The illness.
Yeah. And then that is something really good to remember, you know. And I think for older people in general, it's harder for their bodies to, you know, release the anesthetic if they've had to have a surgery.
Oh gosh.
You know.
We don't bounce back anymore, kids. we slowly claw our way back.
Yeah. So it is important. And that kind of leads me into something I probably should have said in the beginning, you know, as far as care options, you know, establish communication and a partnership with the pharmacist that you get your loved ones medications from.
That's imperative.
And I say this because I've seen it happen over and over and over again with people. So the person goes to, maybe they've seen the same doctor for years, and that doctor, you know, prescribes general medications for them for their different ailments. But now they've got, let's just say, high blood pressure, or they've, you know, had some other issue, and they have to go to a specialist. And then that specialist prescribes medication. And what ends up happening is maybe some of these other medications don't get discontinued. Right. And then the, you know, so now this person's taking kind of two medications, maybe similar for the same issue, or they don't interact very well with each other.
Right.
So I say every time your person has to see a specialist, every time you have to see a specialist for something, talk to your pharmacist, because the doctors, they know what medications to give you for what problems, but they don't always know. No person is perfect, and they don't always know the interactions between medications, and maybe something got always, you know, left off a list or something like that. And they don't realize somebody's on a counteracting medication. And just for instance, recently I had to go to a neurologist, and they prescribed a medication for me. And, but in the notes, for whatever reason, they said that I had chronic back pain.
Oh my.
Along with this other issue. I had to email the doctor and say, I do not have chronic back pain. And so when I went to pick up the medication that they prescribed for me, I did talk to the pharmacist, and I said, hey, I'm on this medication, and I'm worried about taking this medication. Do they have any reactions? And he was so nice and was like, I don't think you should have any problems, but you should look out for this, this, and this.
Good.
I was so glad that I did that, because I'm sensitive to medications. So I'm just saying, it is important, and pharmacists they have that little window for a reason. Talk to them.
Absolutely. they don't want to prescribe something that you're, that's going to, you know, end up hurting you or harming you in any way. They're just as important as the doctor or the nurse or whomever is issuing the prescription. They need to understand, and they see a tiny little piece of the pie, but they need to see the whole pie.
Right.
Everything you can give them. I know, like my chart, we mentioned that before. I know with my recent surgery, and I will say every single, and I saw lots of specialists, and I saw, you know, a whole bunch of people over a 3-month period, and they all, it kind of got annoying, but they would not proceed until we went over every single medication, supplement, vitamin that I'm on. And they all questioned the fact that for some reason, one medication had been duplicated in my record. And they every single one of them caught that. And they said, well, this can't be right. I said, no. And I've asked twice to have it removed. And it's still, you know, the duplicate's still there. So they were paying attention. But, you know, you may get somebody that's super busy and they just don't glance and take it at face value. So it's you have to be your own advocate or the advocate for the person you're caring for.
If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen online at wwer.org.
Please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, carepartners@wwer.org.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.